KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Today's program is dedicated to knee replacement surgery, or knee arthroplasty. Knee replacement is a surgical procedure in which a damaged or worn-out knee joint is replaced by an artificial joint. It's most commonly done for people with severe osteoarthritis, but can also help with rheumatoid arthritis or a traumatic injury. There are now almost 800,000 knee replacements done every year in the U.S., and this number is increasing as our population ages. Excellent results depend on pre-surgery optimization, or prehab, improvements in the materials used and the surgical techniques, as well as physical therapy or rehab after surgery. I am pleased to have orthopedic surgeon Dr. Doug Vermillion and PA Ben Kina from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic with us as guests today to answer all of your knee replacement questions. If you have a question or a comment, please call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. I want to also remind our listeners that this program will be available on demand through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Dr. Doug Vermillion, welcome to Line One.
Welcome.
I'm glad you're here today. I want to give you an opportunity to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got to Alaska, what type of orthopedics you enjoy doing, a little bit about your training.
So I went to West Point. Instead of being a regular school where you memorize everything in the pre-med program, we're taught to solve problems in a lot of math, science, physics, thermodynamics, and that sort of thing. So basically, we have to have a disciplined mind when you go out into the military. So I served 5 years as a military officer, and I was in the infantry. Then I got on the modern pentathlon team, where I had the opportunity to become injured very often and learned a lot about medicine from the receiving end. So when I became a doctor, it was a good experience for me. My first assignment was out at busy troop area, and I had a whole operating room in there, all the facilities all by myself. But Fort Irwin is a very small base, and we had about 10,000 soldiers, and I got to see everybody in town, and they got to see me. And so I was very careful about what I did, and I did it very well, and I tried to plan for all my cases, and I still try to do that as much as possible. I like to do total joints. I think it's a good operation. I think we had the originator from this, Dr. Charney, was knighted for his total hip replacement type of thing. So all these joint procedures are very good procedures, and they work well on most people. Now we have a very large population of these folks that will need total knee replacements in the future.
Yeah, it's a really, really common operation. I know that you guys, just like with operations I perform, the years have been kind to protocols and standardization, and these are getting to be really, almost run-of-the-mill cases at this point. So I want to introduce also PA, and I pronounce your name Kina. I've been doing that for years now. It's Kina, Ben Kina. Welcome to Line One.
Thank you.
So give us a little rundown on a little bit about yourself.
I'm Alaskan. I moved up here in 2001, done a number of things. This is my fourth career, if you will. I was a wildland hotshot in the state of Alaska, turned critical care flight paramedic, turned PA, started working in orthopedics with Dr. Vermillion. We get the opportunity to make people better, get the opportunity to keep people active and moving. Extraordinarily important. I was an athlete in high school, a weekend warrior athlete now, and turned administrator in the most recent career path. So,
yeah, well, it's a pleasure to have you today. I'm excited to talk a little bit about knee replacement. I will remind our listeners of our phone numbers, which is 1-888-353-5752 in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, or email us line1@alaskapublic.org. Well, let's start with the basics. So why would someone need a knee replacement, Dr. Vermillion?
Usually people come for a knee replacement after they have arthritis in their knee. It's not something that's just seen on the x-ray, is that they can't get up and walk anymore. They look for a close parking spot when they go to the store for like 10 minutes. They won't go upstairs. They quit being active. And I think people live longer if they can be active. If you get rid of their knee pain, they'll be more active, probably live longer, and have a much more productive life.
Yeah, movement is key, isn't it? I mean, I think if we stop moving, then things go downhill real quickly. And so the ability to stay mobile and keep moving is a really important part of our longevity. Ben, any thoughts on what you're seeing in terms of the people getting knee replacements these days?
No, absolutely, motion is key. You know, and arthritis is a chronic disease that needs to be managed. It starts early. You know, it can start from first injury of a knee, post-traumatic arthritis, and progresses through life. And the key is there, yeah, again, keep them moving, keep them healthy.
Yeah. So, like, what's the general or most common patient population that you're seeing for first-time knee replacement surgery?
Most of the time, they're over 40 to 50 years old, and they're usually older, but the thing is they can be young as that age. But they usually have been very active most of their lives. They have a lot of arthritis. They're limping. They're having difficulty. They may have some medical problems. Most of the people are just regular people. It affects all walks of life, and men just as much as women.
Yeah, and what are you seeing as the most common cause of osteoarthritis? Is it just, you know, kind of age-related changes, or is it more common after an injury, Ben?
It's a number of things. You know, biology is a beautiful thing, but eventually our cells lose the ability to reproduce and recreate themselves. So we start seeing, you know, degenerative changes, bone spurs, loss of cartilage, and the entire arthritic process start. You know, it's age related, it's genetic, there's genetic components, traumatic, post-traumatic changes. You know, the most studied 3-centimeter tissue in the body arguably is the ACL. So, you know, a lot of people have an ACL reconstruction. We do the best we can. The kinematics are always a little bit different, and these things just kind of lead them down this path of a chronic disease that we manage called arthritis.
Yeah. I know with my father, he's had a knee replacement surgery too, actually. And, you know, all started with, you know, football injury in high school and then a blown out ACL. And just over time, all of these little things. And then there's arthroscopic knee surgeries to repair meniscus eventually. You know, time catches up with you, I guess. You know, is that sort of a common scenario that you see, Dr. Vermillion?
Yes. Yeah, so once you change and tear the ACL, what happens is the biomechanics of the knee have a lot of stresses on certain points, since the cartilage can't wear normally anymore, so it just wears out very quickly. You take out a meniscus, there's a lot more joint reactive force on the knee. It eventually leads to a lot of arthritis. While there are other people that just have arthritis and there's only so many cycles in their cells, just like, you know, our gray hair and things like that, it just gives up and starts having thinner cartilage and it just wears away. So there are two parts of it. There's the post-traumatic and then there's the systemic disease and primary arthritis.
So in people with post-traumatic, do you see more often like unilateral or one-sided issues? Or is it common for people to have disease in both knees?
It's both. A lot of times, if it's post-traumatic, it's usually that knee, but a lot of times their other knee will go bad in a few years. It's variable. Every knee is different. Every individual is different, too.
Yeah. I see people, you know, with the injury of one knee, but then, you know, maybe compensating or favoring one side, which then makes the other joint wear out quicker. Is that something that happens?
I think so, but it's hard to show that. I haven't seen any studies that indicate that, but I think that is something that's real, and it's what happens. And so trying to normalize the other joint and the way you walk and things like that will probably keep you up longer and keep you alive longer, period.
Yeah. So I know a lot of what we talked about in our pre-interview is about preparing someone for surgery, getting them optimized. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But before getting all the way to a knee replacement surgery, I imagine there are many other, little things that people can do in order to prolong that period. So in my profession, you know, we do weight loss surgery, bariatric surgery. Well, no one comes to me as their first option, right? They've tried changing their diet, all of these fad diets, all of these little things, medications, you know, before trying surgery. So is it the same in orthopedic surgery with knees? Ben, what do you see in your patient population?
Absolutely. Any healthcare provider will tell you diet and exercise, right? The knee is, you know, down the channel from, you know, the rest of the body. So physics are working against you. So the more appropriate BMI you can keep, the less stress on the knee and or ankle and subsequently pelvis and, you know, lumbar spine, all those things. So diet and exercise, number one. You know, there's appropriate shoe wear, or if you never wore shoes growing up initially, don't start wearing them right away. You know, there's things you can do with heel wedges in the sole of the shoe to give your knee either a varus or a valgus or a, you know, a bear more weight on the medial or lateral aspect of your knee. For the anterior compartment, you know, we're in Alaska. Everybody's up and down hills and mountains all the time, so walking poles. I'm a sheep hunter. I'm a goat hunter. I hike with my pack up and down, training all the time, and I'm in my 40s, and I'm running around with trekking poles. So trekking poles are huge for the anterior compartment. You know, strength and training, you know, deep squats. Everybody has an opinion about that. There's a number of things to do to keep the joint healthy and mobile. Consistency is key. Active, healthy lifestyle is key. You know, it progresses as far as, you know, injections, intra-articular injections. There's a number of different things we can do with that. You know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories can help. Yeah, there's a whole onslaught before we pull the trigger for surgery.
Yeah, let's go into those a little bit more detail. So let's say I'm having some, you know, some knee pain. I maybe tweaked my knee. I'm in my 40s too. I'm not as active as you, but try to be. You know, is a brace going to help me? Is that something that you guys recommend? Or you mentioned orthotics. So let's talk about, like, your braces and orthotics options. Dr. Vermillion.
So most of the time, people have arthritis on the inside of their knee, the medial portion of it. And if you get some lateral heel wedges, in about half the patients, they get a little bit of relief. And about 28% get a lot of relief. So doing that first gets about 80%, and it's an easy get. You can put these wedges in your shoes and wear them when you're walking, and it's very helpful for you. Also, some of the newer shoes that have very thick soles, it's helpful for you. The braces are hard to wear sometimes. They just rub your skin raw. And when I was first in the Army, I was in the desert, and those guys couldn't tolerate wearing braces because it was just so hot. And everybody changes their position of their leg all the time, and so keeping a brace on when you're doing a lot of things is difficult. The most of the thing we usually do is try to get their muscle strong. If you have a strong quadriceps muscle or your thigh muscle, a lot of people can tolerate a great deal. There are people with really bad arthritis, but if they have quads of steel, they don't seem to mind the arthritis. I think keeping your weight down, keeping your muscle strong, trying to maintain the motion as best you can. And the other things that people don't even talk about, one of the things here in Alaska is vitamin D deficiency. If you have a normal vitamin D, your arthritis development will slow down a great deal.
Oh, that's very interesting. Let's go into that a little bit more. Let me remind our listeners, 1-888-353-5752. Or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433 if you have knee-related questions. So vitamin D, I know we've done shows with dermatology and whatnot, and it's interesting because of the latitude of Alaska. The sun, even though we get 20 hours of sunlight a day in the summer, it doesn't translate into vitamin D for us. And so everybody in Alaska needs to be supplementing with vitamin D. And so what you're telling me is that deficiency or that chronic deficiency can actually make your arthritis worse?
Right. People think in the summertime we're getting a lot of sun, but actually if I go outside in the summer and get down to a t-shirt, I'm going to get eaten by the bugs. So most of the people don't wear skinny t-shirts and shorts all the time unless it's very, very warm. And then most of our summer does have a lot of rain involved, so people don't really get as much as they think they do. So if you're getting a suntan or if you're in the sun and you're in a swimsuit, you're going to get a sunburn will give you 50,000 international units. So people need between 5,000 and 10,000 a day, depending how big you are.
Yeah, I recommend with my patients that everyone supplement at least 5,000 to 6,000 a day. For vitamin D. So we've talked about, so braces, not functionally very useful for a lot of patients, but orthotics tend to be quite useful for patients. We mentioned that. Lifestyle, including keeping your weight down, it's a matter of just physics and gravity. Let's talk about medications. So, you know, in the military, Doug, you know, I was in the military as well, and we used to call it vitamin M, you know, vitamin Motrin for everything. You know, it's an NSAID medication. Are those going to be useful in your patients?
I think intermittently anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen or naproxen or Aleve are good. But the thing is, if you take them all the time, it suppresses the bone growth in your underlying bone a little bit, and I think it makes your arthritis accelerate. So don't take them all the time. You're better off taking them intermittently as needed when you're going to do something. The other thing you have to be careful for, if like you're hiking, you'll get dehydrated. So taking a lot of anti-inflammatories when you're dehydrated is probably not good for your kidneys either. So you have to be careful with them.
Yeah, and use of NSAIDs in large amounts can cause stomach issues, ulcers, other downstream issues that we have to be careful of as well. But, you know, common NSAIDs that you guys are seeing can be ibuprofen, Motrin, Advil, Aleve, Celebrex, all of those things, right?
And don't forget turmeric elixir. That is one of the things that's good for some people.
Got it, turmeric. Now, I have seen also people swear by, chondroitin.
Glucosamine
and chondroitin. Is that useful in some patients?
I advocate if they believe it's going to work and they want it to work, take it. You know,
yeah.
The studies you look at is 50-50. So I think there's at least a placebo effect, so I advocate for it when people want it.
Yeah, it's generally not harmful necessarily. So, you know, if it doesn't hurt, then, you know, it may help. So
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about steroid injections. Oh, you know what? Let's... We have a call from Lauren, so we'll take Lauren's call here on Lauren, welcome to line one.
Yes, thank you for this subject matter. I am interested in, I heard about the Jiffy, J-I-F-F-Y, and replacement. And I would like to know if there are disadvantages to that over a regular knee replacement.
Absolutely. Lauren, we are going to talk about the Jiffy knee, but I'm going to push that just a few minutes down the line just so that we can get through the rest of the before knee topic here. So I keep listening, please. But for those of you interested in the Jiffy knee, which is all the rage these days, so I'm told we will be talking about the Jiffy knee here in just a little bit. So, Lauren, thanks for the call. Keep listening. And if you have questions after that, please call back, okay?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So, gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about steroid injections because I want to know kind of what they are, how they're done, why would you do them, are they useful?
Cortisone is... medication which shuts down inflammation. And with arthritis, if you shut down inflammation, you shut down the production of all these evil humors in your knee, cytokines and things that soften the cartilage. So you're shutting down the process. Typically, a knee injection lasts about 2 months. That's on the average. But sometimes every once in a while, you need a injection in your knee. I've had it before, and it helps quite a bit get you over the hump. Those things are actually okay. I like to use them in the clinical setting by getting someone to physical therapy. If you inject the knee and then by the time they get their physical therapy appointment, the cortisone is working, they're kind of ready to go and they can tolerate the physical therapy and it helps them get through the rough spot. But for long term, it's not really a good thing. You can only do those on a limited basis.
Okay. And Ben, you're doing those in the clinic, I imagine. You get to see a lot of those. What's the process for those? Is it easy, simple, just in-office type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Coming from, you know, looking through a scope of an orthopedic specialist, it's very run-of-the-mill, very easy to do, well accepted by insurances and effective, you know, is the number one thing. It's like Dr. Vermeulen said, there's a limiting factor to it of time. You don't want to exhaust and or do them too frequently, but it has a lot of advantages in getting them over the hump. I call it adult sports medicine, keeping people in the game. You know, if somebody has trip or a wedding coming up and their knee's bugging them, they can't walk more than a couple hundred yards or get into the airport, it may be appropriate to bridge them with a steroid injection, get them into some physical therapy prior to them coming back, and then reevaluate and kind of see how they're progressing. Yeah. Very helpful tool.
Okay, awesome. We're going to take a quick short break here. You are listening to Line One, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on knee replacements with orthopedic surgeon Dr. Doug Vermillion and PA Ben Kine from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Doug Vermillion, and PA Ben Kine from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic. Are you in need of a knee replacement? Do you have questions about knee replacement surgery? If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, gentlemen, getting a few calls here. I want to get into the knee replacement, the techniques, and this Jiffy knee, but I think there's one important topic I want to broach first, and that is the idea of prehab or pre-surgery optimization. Because obviously, if you want good results, you gotta do the work before the surgery. And so let's talk a little bit about in your office. I know you both focus a lot on pre-surgery optimization. And what does that look like?
The first thing is the medical optimization. If you have any cardiac problems or some sort of other medical problem, like an infection, you have to have that settled down or optimized before surgery, and then we'll do the surgery. Other things include doing prehab. Prehab is basically learning to use a walker or crutches before surgery, because when you get up after surgery, you're not really with it, and learning something new at that time is not as easy. But if you practice, you just get up and go. It makes it better for the patients to mobilize. And if you mobilize early and get up and walk early, what happens is you don't get blood clots, you don't get pneumonia, you don't get urinary tract infections. Other things that are optimized would be your dental work and make sure you don't have an active infection, that sort of thing. So also we like to do a CT scan, a computerized tomography, to look at the knee so we can do the robot and do optimization there and actually get the bony cuts and things like that dialed in, especially if there's a large deformity or something abnormal in the knee. So it just makes the optimum outcome more likely.
Yeah. Ben, anything to add to that?
Yeah, this is something Dr. Vermillion and I are very passionate about. You know, there's been a lot of progress in the way total joints have been done just in the last 10 years in the state of Alaska. You know, patients were admitted to the hospital routinely overnight, one or two nights. Now, you know, with patient optimization, working with their primary care. And the biggest thing is patient education. We're getting patients out same day of surgery. So multimodal pain management, we have an entire protocol we've put together, Doug and I, and we've been using effectively with same day outpatient total joint discharge for the last 8 years. It's very commonly done prior to that. Started doing it here in the state of Alaska. It's been very, very successful, but the key component to that, along with prehab and working with a primary care provider, maximizing, you know, management of their chronic kidney disease or what have you, but education. So not to give everything away, but that's the secret sauce. You know, if you have somebody who's been around 5, 6, 7 decades of life, you can't tell them anything. If you tell them what you're looking for, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, and what the reason for it is, compliance is off the charts.
Okay. So what I'm taking away is, if you're going to have a knee replacement, it's important to get all the ducks in a row prior to the surgery. That includes, managing your weight, getting a good high protein, diet in place, working on strengthening the muscles even before the operation, working with crutches and things like that, making sure your diabetes is under control, basically making sure you're optimized from as much as possible to maximize the results of the knee. Would that be a good summary?
That is. The other thing we do is the pre-op process. We have a meeting with the patients and go through, like, we call it a boot camp sometimes, and basically how to optimize your medications so that you're not using a lot of narcotics, that you use anti-inflammatories, you use Tylenol, you use muscle relaxant, and try to use the narcotics last. People do better with less narcotics. They're up earlier, and it just gets people to know what's going on, how to handle the problems that they have, which are common and expected, and we have a good line of communication with them, so when we go through the surgical process, we can help them out along the way.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, let's get a little bit into the knee replacement techniques and the materials used. So our call earlier from Lauren, it was in regards to the Jiffy knee. Jiffy, to me, it looks like the peanut butter because I grew up in that day. But obviously, this is a highly marketed procedure. So what, I guess we'll start with, like, you know, what is the Jiffy knee? How is that different than your run-of-the-mill kind of knee replacement? Like, just let's outline that a little bit. So
there's a number of things. You know, it's done by Dr. Brad Sparks with Alaska Fraction Orthopedic Clinic. He went down and trained with Dr. Patel in Lower 48 and got himself trained up on the surgical technique. It focuses on, again, optimizing the patient preoperatively, decreased surgical times, and no tourniquet. There's a number of advantages to being under anesthesia for a shorter duration of time, and there's anatomy that's spared, unlike the standard total joint approach that makes the rehab faster. It's a remarkable surgery. Total knees, just in general, the Jiffy knee has been extraordinarily well liked and well visited, and it's a great procedure.
Okay, so let me take one step back just so that I'm clear, because I'm not an orthopedic surgeon. When you replace the knee, what's the general idea? There's two parts to the knee, right? There's the femur and the tibia, and they're joined there. What's replaced in a standard knee replacement surgery?
So the first thing is that there are actually three parts. There's the patella also. So basically we resurface that and put a plastic button on that and make sure that that doesn't wear out later on. So it'll glide very nicely. On the femur, which is the thigh bone, you put a resurfacing component on there, which is a nice, shiny, smooth, metallic component. Some people are allergic to that. Do they have metal allergy problems? So we have other components available. Then there's the tibia platform. You can do it a couple ways with the tibia. You can either use, if you have osteoporosis, it may be good just to use all plastic and cement it down. And then you can cement a metal piece and then have a plastic liner, which are adjustable. You can just change the liner out and for the right size. So if it's, you have a size that's in between, you'll optimize that and get the right size for the patient. So they're modular. So these modular implants have three components, and they're a little bit different. But the thing you have to watch out for is not using cement and doing uncemented for patients with osteoporosis. So if you have osteoporosis, you may not want an uncemented implant.
Okay, so it gets very, very complicated, which is why patients need to see you in the office to discuss all of the options. Right. We're not going to get to all of the nitty-gritty here today on the radio, but basically a total knee replacement is where the knee is removed, right? The old bones are...
The surface of the knee is removed. You don't take the whole thing out and replace it like a big part, like a transmission or something. You just basically resurface the 8 millimeters or so.
I have a great Alaskan analogy. So just like the asphalt wears out, they shave the top of the asphalt off here in the state of Alaska and then lay down another layer. That's essentially what we're doing. Total joint replacement is not the best verbiage, right? It's a joint resurfacing. We're taking off the minimal amount we can of the distal femur and proximal tibia and the inferior patella, and then we're pressing on the components.
Okay, interesting. So in my mind, I'm seeing, you know, the knee joint kind of removed and then new knee components, you know, put in, but that's not actually the way that the most commonly is done. Okay, it's just resurfacing the areas using either metal or plastic.
Correct.
Okay, and so we have a call here. I think it's Oriella from Sitka. Welcome to line one.
Yes, thank you. My question is, I was injured when I was younger. I'm 68 now. I have, 67, living 68. I have a ACL repair from when I was 40 playing soccer and got tackled. And then now, less than 2 years ago, I tore my other knee meniscus. So my question is, I have already been told, yes, I'm definitely a candidate for knee replacement. What are your thoughts on doing them at the same time versus one at a time?
Great question, Oriella. I'll pose this to our surgeon, Dr. Vermillion.
I've done both, but I think patients do better one at a time, because one of the things I do is I inject the knees and do a periarticular injection. And that means you put a lot of little syringes of numbing medicine that lasts a day or two at the most, but initially for the initial time. But if you do both at one time, you don't have enough numbing medicine to prevent you from having a lot of pain. So if you do one at a time, I think you're better off medically. And also it puts a lot of stress on people. The results are good, but the thing is it's just a lot more difficult to get through it.
Yeah, I guess the recovery, you know, after surgery, more pain. But the downside of doing you one at a time is it's two separate operations and two separate recoveries. So I guess that would be really dependent on the patient specifically.
Yes, some people can tolerate that. Like the last time I did one, the guy told me that he was taking his moose across the McLaren River a mile at a time through the tundra, and his knees were killing him. I knew he could tolerate surgery. He's a very strong person. He's cardiac-wise, he was good. It's usually the medical issues that I worry about most when I do both knees, and you have to watch people very closely.
Okay. Oriella, I hope that answers your question. A good discussion to have with your surgeon down there. Eric is calling from Fairbanks. Welcome to line one.
Good morning.
Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. My question is, my wife's knee, she has a torn meniscus. Most of the time it doesn't have any problem, but when things flip over or get hitched up in there, she has a lot of pain, and we have been looking into it, whether that's a total knee replacement or what can be done for the meniscus.
Okay, we'll start here with PA Ben.
Yeah, a torn meniscus can be a problem in a number of ways. You know, the mechanical portion of it is an important point that you made there. So when things are getting caught, you're in Fairbanks, so this will probably make sense. Think about gravel and a bearing. Okay, so if the bearing has gravel on it, it's going to wear out that bearing a lot faster. So I would definitely get the meniscus tear at minimum addressed. Now, the rest of the cartilage around the rest of the knee, you know, if you have a meniscus tear, that's one compartment, medial or lateral joint, that there's going to be, you know, the other medial or lateral joint, and then the subsequent other side of that, and then the anterior portion. You know, how does the cartilage look there? You got to evaluate if they're diseased as well, and then see how the rest of the knee is in general, and then that'll direct if you need to go total joint or if you can do something more conservative.
So arthroscopy or, you know, minimally invasive surgery to maybe clean, you know, take out bone spurs or fix tears, is that useful, you know, to bridge someone to surgery, or is that, you know, where is that in the treatment algorithm?
Absolutely. If the rest of the joint is very healthy, you know, MRI is going to be indicated for evaluating the weight-bearing surface and the cartilage surfaces. And if those look great, then in no matter the age of the person, then just addressing the meniscus would be great. And that's usually done with an arthroscopy, which is, yes, minimally invasive.
Okay. So in this situation, let's, you know, say Eric's wife is here in your office, the first step would potentially be an MRI to look at all of the joint, or what would you recommend prior to doing any surgery?
Yeah, if she has mechanical symptoms and its physical exam indicates an MRI, or excuse me, a meniscus tear, then MRI to confirm, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing you have to think about here in Alaska is that half the year we're covered with ice, and our parking lots are not that smooth anyway. People have a hard time walking, and falling down is a, you know, an onerous type of thing for people. So if someone's worried about falling, going up and down the stairs, you're better off fixing it. So I have a low threshold to fix these, no matter what the age is, and you know, come up with a plan with them and talk to them about it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea. So let's jump right back to, we talked about the surgery, the resurfacing of the knee top and bottom and the patella. Now, how is the Jiffy knee different than that? And Ben, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, like muscle sparing or no tourniquet. So I wanted to mention, you know, a tourniquet is where you you know, if you think about the movies, you know, putting a belt around the leg and cinching it down so that you're not getting a lot of bleeding during the operation. But it sounds like in the Jiffy knee, that's not done. So let's talk a little bit more about the Jiffy knee.
Yeah, Jiffy knee again. I've not been into surgeries with Dr. Sparks, and he'd be the best person to speak to it again. But the concept is, you know, minimal surgical times, have people under anesthesia for a shorter duration. Again, he is sparing the extensor mechanism and doing a, you know, a different approach to the knee, which isn't all that commonly practiced with total joint replacement. He doesn't use a tourniquet, so that decreases the noxious stimulus that try to wake people up, you know, intraoperatively. Postoperative rehab, they're followed closely. They're in physical therapy early. That's the gist, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Dr. Vermillion, you're getting along in the tooth, if I'm allowed to say. And so what would be the benefit? I mean, is this where the future knee replacement surgeries are kind of moving, or what's the benefit of this kind of technique versus, you know, kind of the old school way of doing it?
I think if you have a knee which is simple without a big deformity, I think a Jiffy knee may be a good option. If you have osteoporotic bone, it's not a good option. If you have a big deformity or something like that, you really can't adjust things. You have to do it the old-fashioned way. If you have variations in your anatomy, which have a lot of different things you need, it's better to do it the old-fashioned way, which is tried and true. It's a good knee. I use that implant. If someone has a metallurgy, I think it's a very good implant to use.
Okay, awesome. We have an email from about allergies. We'll get to that here after this next break. We're going to take our second short break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guests today, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. Or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on knee replacements with orthopedic surgeon Dr. Doug Vermillion and PA Ben Keeney from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
For more than four decades, Alaska News Nightly has brought you award-winning statewide news. From Dutch Harbor to Prudhoe Bay, from Metlakatla to Koktovik, Alaska News Nightly covers every corner of Alaska, keeping you up to date about the issues you care about most. Join me, Casey Grove, for Alaska News Nightly, weeknights on your local public radio station.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by orthopedic surgeon Dr. Doug Vermillion and PA Ben Kine from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic. Are you interested in a knee replacement? Do you have questions about knee replacement surgery? Call us 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so Karen sent me an email. She was just commenting about the two knees replaced at once. She was able to do it at age 72, and because she had to travel from Fairbanks to Anchorage, it was worth her doing it all at one time, but she did say days 3 and 4 were not fun. So just her 2 cents there. I do want to answer an email also from Chris regarding allergies to different metals. And so, Doug, you touched on this earlier, but what type of metal is used in knee replacement surgery? And is allergy testing a common thing to do before a knee replacement?
It's not that common. The insurance companies won't pay for it. And if you take a blood sample and send it off to Chicago, they'll analyze it for $500 to $800 and let you know what's going on. That's probably prudent to do. My screening test is basically ask patients if they're able to wear cheap jewelry, if they're able to, if they get a rash with it. And a lot of people, that's probably the best screening question. If they have any problems like that, I make sure that I just don't use the regular implants. Specifically, people are allergic to nickel. Some of them are also with cobalt and chrome, and so those have been problematic with a lot of people. So if you use a coated implant, it's like zirconium or some other metals, that they're better and they don't have the same reactivity that people have with them.
Okay, so I know cobalt was a big one. There was a documentary done about it here in Alaska about cobalt allergies. So basically screening tests, but you know, is it common to have allergies to these metals? Like, is this something that you would have your patients tested for if it were covered? Or yeah,
absolutely. I'll take that one. It's common. It's the cheap Claire's earrings, which is, you know, just taking a good history. That's where you catch most of them. You know, not all manufacturers of total joints make a hypoallergenic component or knee, and oftentimes surgeons are very set in the way of what components they want to use. So sometimes it's not even an option. It's definitely understudied at this point. The nickel is the primary issue that we see, and you know, with a good history, we're able to, you know, stratify pretty well with that. The LTT test that Dr. Vermillion is speaking of is a blood draw sent to a lower 48. That's the best way we know of to evaluate their allergy to metals. It goes, you know, top to bottom and tells you the reactivity with a control there. So, you know, nickel is the biggest culprit in that one.
Okay, so nickel, cobalt allergies, if people have that, then we can, you can recommend different implants potentially for
absolutely
that. Okay. Great. Cindy is calling from Sterling, Alaska. Welcome to Line 1.
Yes, hi. I am so happy you're having this discussion. I am a pickleball player, and I know I have really bad knees. I wear braces on both knees when I play. That mostly kind of helps mentally for me, I would say. So my question is, because I have been in to see people about, you know, what should I do about my knees? I've had 2 shots in one knee, 1 shot in another knee. Of course, that helps temporarily. I've had one set of doctors tell me you can only get that limited. I had another doctor just recently tell me I could have that from here to eternity, which, you know, that's a little scary. So my question then is, what is the timeline that you tell people that they have to wait for? Because to me, I am in good health now. I don't want to wait until I'm, you know, 80 years old before I get surgery on my knees just so I can walk. I want to be able to get it done as soon as I can so I know that I have a good quality of playing life. So when is the, what is it that draws a line as far as when you can get your knee surgery? Is it insurance driven?
So Cindy, you have really good points here, and I think we're gonna have a good discussion about this. And it raises an interesting question about yes, do you want to do it earlier when you're healthy, but then maybe your knee wears out? Or do you do it later in life, but then you're not quite as healthy, you don't get the longevity out of it? So let's pose this to our experts here. Dr. Vermillion, with you first.
I think you have a good point. I think when people get older and wait till they get older, they quit walking around, their muscle mass goes down, the heart and lung function isn't as good. I think you're going to have a better outcome if you do it a little bit earlier on that spectrum than rather wait till late, where it's almost too late to have a good outcome. As far as total knees go and how long they last, if you're active like that, playing tennis or doubles tennis or pickleball or something like that, actually the Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins did studies on this, and they found out that although they didn't recommend people doing these things, those patients did better. I think they're a healthier group of patients, and they did better. And I don't think I would worry too much about this thing not lasting, the implant wearing out. 90% of them last 20 years. So I think you're going to be good for a while. And then later on, 20 years from now, you're probably not going to be doing too much pickleball. But then while you can do it, I think you should try to do that and stay as active as you can.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in not waiting as well for a lot of these things. I think, you know, in my patient population, the biggest complaint I hear is that, you know, I wish I would have done this sooner because of how much it impacts the quality of life. So, Ben, any thoughts on Cindy's question?
Absolutely. You know, it's a very personal decision to make, and we counsel our patients that, you know, 90% of the time, 20-year components, you know. Optimizing your bone health as a female, that's going to be huge. Taking vitamin D, make sure you're stressing your skeleton, do the things you can do to fight osteoporosis, and those metal components should stay well adhered to the bone for a very long time. You know, then you're looking at 20 years, it's almost like a little oil change where we can do a less invasive incision and go in and pull out the plastic liner between the two metal components and pop a new one in. And that's well tolerated. You're not down for a very long period of time at all. You know, if the main discussion I have with patients are, you know, if you're out and about with your family and you choose to do something markedly different than the rest of your family, or you're choosing to make a less active decision because your knee hurts so bad, it's time to have a talk with a professional.
Yeah, great point. Our next call is from Robert in Matsu Valley. Robert, welcome to line one.
Hello, yes, thank you for having me. I had a question, but holding off on that for a second. I had I'm bone on bone both knees. I had the traditional surgery in November. I had inquired about the Jiffy, and he had talked about one of the things was you're operating a little more in the blind. You don't have the same amount of visibility, the surgeon. But anyways, I'm slated for the other knee, and talked to him recently, and he said it's not Jiffy, but basically, you know, I guess that's a trademark name. He switched over to that one. And I kind of wish I'd have held off in the sense of you didn't really share it with the listeners. The traditional way they're slicing through the quadricep, et cetera, and, you know, just so much more invasive. And I know everybody's different, but my first few weeks were brutal. But all of that aside, and I listened to what you said, but are they seeing any difference with the end product of the Jiffy style where they're coming in from the side in terms of range of motion when all said and done? Because physical therapy, I'm over 126 degrees, and they're all happy with that, but I can, you know, it's still not like it was before, and I don't know if that's going to be like that forever, or the Jiffy type approach is no better or worse.
Yeah, Robert, all good points here. I'm going to pose this question here to Ben. Wants to take this one, kind of comparing results, Jiffy versus traditional.
Absolutely. You know, it's a great question, and the jury's out on a lot of this stuff. We looked at physical therapy, for instance, postoperatively with total joints, and, you know, with the SwiftPath program we were doing with not admitting patients to hospitals and same-day discharge, we were heavy on physical therapy. You know, as a guy doing the same technique and conversely was doing no physical therapy, and we found that it just in that small study group that 6 weeks postoperatively, the range of motion was the same. So it's real hard to measure. A lot of it's subjectivity and some of it's objectivity, right? And in total joint replacement, really what we can measure objectively is range of motion. So we put a lot of focus in range of motion. So you mentioned that you're greater than 120 degrees. And, you know, it stands to reason that you'll get more range of motion quicker if the quad isn't violated as far as the tire extension mechanism of your knee, right? So there's a lot of arguments back and forth of what components to use and how to go about it. And the robotics have markedly changed the ability for us to see better with a smaller exposure. So that's another whole part of this conversation that needs to be broached as well. So the main thing is get to the right surgeon, pick your surgical team, and do what they do best.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit more, because, you know, Jiffy is a trade name, and it's a little bit of a different technique, but it, ultimately it's still a replacement of the joints, just doing it slightly different. And so the big question is, like, what, you know, are the outcomes that different, or it's, you know, it's very surgeon dependent. You know, when I would do a surgery, I want to do it the way I know how to do it the best, because that's the way the patient's going to get the best results. So, question here, Frankie and Juno wants to know a little bit more about robotic assistance compared to the Jiffy knee. And so now I understand, Doug, I'll have you talk about this, but computer assistance in robotics and knee replacement has really become widespread. So, how has computer assistance, you know, changed your practice?
So every once in a while, when I was not doing computer assist, I'd put the instruments in and the patient's knee was a little bit crooked. And when I went to computer assisted, all those outliers went away. So the thing is, you don't have outliers, and you're about 80 to 90% sure that you're going to get the very good alignment. When you're doing it with a robot, you're actually having a CT scan, and then you mark the knee inside the knee so it matches up with the CT scan, and then use the computer to calculate how much of an angle you cut, if you want to make the space a little bit open on one side or the other, so it balances the knee better. So you make your cuts, and I think patients reach good range of motion, their better range of motion earlier with that. So the thing is, like, getting the bone cuts correct is a very, very important thing. And I think looking at it from a good viewpoint with a normal exposure, especially if you have bone on bone changes and lots of spurs and things like that, you can get all those out of the way and see them very well, and you have a good outcome. And whether you get there with a Jiffy knee or whether with a robot knee, I think the outcomes when you use instruments and use computer assist versus a robot, they're going to be better. I think you're going to have no outliers. You're going to get the knee in the correct place where you want to have it. You don't want to have, like if you're bow-legged going in, you've always been bow-legged. If I make your knee straight, which is what we used to want to do, that doesn't track as well. But if I make you a little bit of bow-legged and get you physiologic kinematics correct, to where that's matches your normal way of moving your knee, you're going to have much better motion. It's going to be fluid. I think you'll be a happy patient. So there's a lot of ways to skin this cat. And the thing is, I think you should do what the surgeon does best and have him explain it to you. That is usually the best outcome for patients.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that sentiment. You know, when I trained many years ago and I got to, you know, see these surgeries, I didn't go into orthopedics, but I, you know, got to assist in knee replacement surgeries. And just, it was kind of a, you know, an old fashioned, you know, kind of barbaric procedure. You know, it was a whole lot of, like, you know, eyeballing it. And that looks pretty good, you know, and then figuring out, you know, afterwards, okay, well, maybe, you know, it wasn't so good. So what you're telling me is that computer assistance in robotics is kind of leveling the playing field a little bit and kind of making your results more streamlined or you know, better.
The results are getting uniformly better overall, and that's the patient's benefit.
Yeah. True. Yeah, absolutely. Frankie, thanks for your question about comparing robot and the Jiffy knee there. let's go to our next caller. We have David all the way from Petersburg. Welcome to Line 1, David.
Good morning. Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of comments. One, my wife has had knee surgery a year and a half ago now, and is very grateful that she did it. We were about 70 at the time, and she was having trouble getting around, and now she can't speak highly of it, or more highly of it, so I certainly encourage your listeners who are questioning the process, to go forward with it. One thing I think that helped her quite a bit was after surgery, the anesthesiologist came in and she put a kind of a soaker hose on her inside of her thigh that went, inside and created a nerve block on the inside of the leg. She had a deflate, a bulb that she wore that deflated over the period of 3 days. I think that really helped, and I'm just curious about your comments of it and how normal that is of practice, because it certainly seemed to help her in the recovery.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, David. We're running low on time, so I'll pose that here to Ben. Any comments about the pain control after surgery?
Absolutely. Total joint is a we can't sugarcoat. It's a very painful procedure, right? It is very manageable, right? In the presence of multimodal pain management, we've had the best results. He's talking about a femoral nerve block. It has its limitations. You can get an injury to the femoral nerve, which is one of the risks. The limitation is it's anesthetized just the anterior portion of the knee. The posterior aspect isn't as well anesthetized. So when we started doing the outpatient same-day discharge total joint, Dr. Vermillion and I went down and trained in a bunch of cadaver labs to inject this lipid-soluble bupivacaine, which is a long-acting numbing medication. And what that means, folks, is simply a numbing medication that is attached to a piece of fat, and your body has to break down that piece of fat, and it's a time-release capsule of numbing medication. So, with diligent use of local injections intraoperatively, this is practiced very commonly in the Jiffy knee as well. And we're having really, really good pain relief postoperatively. And that last, package insert says 72 hours. We see about a day and a half. And with the preoperative education and multimodal pain management using, rest, ice, elevation, compression, non-steroidal, anti-inflammatories, Tylenol, aspirin, everything before you touch, an opioid, a controlled substance, we've seen a dramatic decrease in the use of opiate use after surgery. We rarely refill a script after, total joint replacement, and the results have been phenomenal. So yeah, we've kind of gone away for the most part from, and it's surgeon dependent. Everything we say here is kind of the way that we practice. I grew up with Doug in orthopedics, right? So our practice is very much the same, which you got to, pick your surgeon, pick the team, and go with what they do.
Yeah. Doug, we have about 1 minute left. Unfortunately, I wish we have a lot more calls and emails we could get to, but I want to give you guys both a quick opportunity. Any closing thoughts, any comments, how do listeners contact you?
All right. The first thing is that you try to stay as active as possible. Make sure you're keeping your vitamin D up. And when you have a knee problem, go get seen early. And maybe a lot of times you can get a lot of care from conservative treatment, which means non-operative, with injections, including platelet-rich plasma and other things which last longer. And when you need surgery, you'll tell us. You'll tell us when you can't be as active. And trying to optimize your medical conditions at all times to your primary care doctor, make sure you link up with them. I think that'll be a better outcome for you.
Awesome. Website, Ben?
AFOC.com.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time that we are going to have today for our listeners. I think we'll have to do a follow-up show to get to some of these other questions. But special thanks to our guests for being with us today, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Doug Vermillion and PA Ben Keeney from Alaska Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Rachel. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. This program will also be available on demand through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Schumigan Corporation. Located in Sand Point, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sand Point Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sand Point, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sand Point, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay,